All right. Good morning, listeners, and welcome to this week's news from the Drug War Front. My name is Jeff, and my co-presenter is Marion. Good morning to you, Marion. How are you on this
I'm feeling summer's great, day? Hot and sweaty, Jeffrey, but, you know, lovely to see you. Lovely to have you, listeners. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Mary. Wakey, wakey, rise and shine. I know I woke you up at 7:30, but you can get up again and listen to the radio show now.
Well, sometimes it's nice to get things done early on a hot day, isn't it?
You know, well, it's the only time. Although I suspect we may not get 35 today, Jeffrey.
It's cloudy.
Looks a bit cooler out there and it's raining in Wagga already.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we may get the rain earlier
a little
than
bit
we
earlier.
Thought.
Well,
hopefully anyway, because I tell you, I had a shower and I was dripping with sweat 5 seconds later.
Yeah, look, I'll be happy with any
cool, little bit of cool. Coolness. Well, you're not a hot person.
I'm not a hot
You're not
person.
A heat person by any stretch of the imagination.
Definitely not. Yeah. All right. Look, I'll just give you some introduction, listeners. This is news from the Drug War Front, brought to you by CARMA, the Canberra Alliance for Harm Minimisation and Advocacy, which is a peer-based, community-controlled drug user organisation. Now, the community of people who inject drugs were very instrumental in the highly successful public health response to the HIV/AIDS epidemic in Australia back in the 1980s, and they remain active in disseminating information into the community about other bloodborne viruses and the harms caused by prohibition. Unfortunately, many human rights abuses of people who use drugs continue, and we would like to take this opportunity to acknowledge the peers who went before us and reaffirm our commitment to fighting the effects of stigma and criminalisation in all of their manifestations. The show aims to inform and educate listeners about the failure of the war on people who use drugs and, of course, promote the services offered by CARMA and also the other agencies in the alcohol and other drug sector in the ACT. And just to give some idea of the show's stories we're going to be talking about, there was a report from the Australian Financial Review that Australian banks laundered $500 million Australian dollars for cocaine cartel organisations.
Yeah, wow.
Which is not really their legal business operations, I would have thought.
No, strange that, yeah.
Another piece, evidently tobacco or illicit tobacco is becoming a highly lucrative trade.
What a surprise, Jeffrey. Now, didn't we say that? Wasn't that going to go up in terms of financing and availability and make a great criminal enterprise? The minute that they started to increase the price on the street, they were going to reduce the prices on the black market, recruit to the black market, make a really prevalent black market so that they would undercut the taxation anyway.
That's right.
So get rid of the tax and you make the price of tobacco bugger all, really. So they would provide it with tax-free, which means black market. And then people would be sucked into the black market because it's a big addiction, nicotine.
Oh,
it's a really strong addiction, and getting rid of it's one of my hardest one, I reckon.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I'm an ex-smoker too. I know fully well how
giving it up was would have been a shot.
In a probably a lengthy piece, but I think a very important one given the change of administration in the US to the Biden administration. We've got a piece which we'll discuss called The Biden Administration and Drug Policy, Expectation versus Reality.
Oh, absolutely.
Which
very
puts
useful.
A cautionary note to the optimism that a lot of people might have.
And there's a limit to the amount that he can do in the first 100 days, even though that's how they're measured. And the road to hell is paved with good intentions, Jeffrey. We all know that. But he will do what he can. I have faith in him. He'll do what he can. If it's not achievable, he won't attain it. Yeah.
Look,
he will push for what he can get to. But apart from that, he can't overreach.
No.
Yeah.
He's got a lot on his plate. But my sense of it is he's an experienced politician. He knows how the system works.
He's been there forever, yep.
And he's a fundamentally, you know,
decent person.
And that's a hell of an improvement.
And a pragmatic person, I think, too.
Pragmatic.
You know, he knows that he's got to bring another 90 million people along with him who are Trump supporters alone, but also the very left wing of his own party and the Republicans.
Yeah.
So they're already saying 1.9 million, you're kidding. Even though 1.9 million was actually smaller than Trump was asking for. He was asking for 9.1 or something, trillion.
I think he's
deficit,
going to try very hard to find people, Republican senators, who he can have a conversation with.
I think there's about 19 that they're thinking of crossing the floor just for the impeachment.
Wow.
So I suspect there might be more support in the Republican movement than he is anticipating. for the support for the relief package, for the COVID relief package?
Well, that's crucial.
Yeah, absolutely.
People, I mean, unlike here where we had jobs, you know.
Job seeker, job keeper, tough.
Which actually made a huge difference to keep people in jobs.
And they're absolutely freaking out at the loss of job keeper.
I'm not surprised. Yeah. But in the US, I think there was one payment under Trump that I think was $1,000 that the cheque had his name on, or, you know, the letter that came with the money.
He made himself a big fella out of doing
As if he'd come out of his pocket. But, you know, this is, I think, another $1,400 to Americans who are battling to feed themselves, Marion.
Absolutely.
In the wealthiest country on earth.
Absolutely. And even the food agencies, the food support agencies, food stamps agencies haven't got the food to give to them. Let alone the vaccine, what's happening with the vaccine. I kind of wish that the AstraZeneca vaccine was out rather than the COVID one. That's just, sorry, the Pfizer one, because the Pfizer one's like minus 70 degrees to maintain its efficacy. What's the AstraZeneca is something like 2.8 degrees positive, 2.8 degrees storage.
Store it in the fridge.
And that's, piss easy.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned the Pfizer because I bought the Sydney Morning Herald this morning, and on the front page there's a small warning from the Therapeutic Goods Administration that said that the Pfizer vaccine would stop the virus in 95% of recipients, but more than half would experience side effects such as headaches and fatigue.
And that worried me. Minus 70 going into your muscle.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that's not going to hurt, Jeffrey. Minus 70 degrees worth of vaccine into your muscle? Well, would hurt.
It puts question marks.
Let alone side effects from the drug itself. Yeah?
Yeah.
What's been happening in Norway, they're saying, oh, that's with frail-aged people. Yeah, so frail-aged people are dying from it. What are the side effects for the people who aren't frail-aged but maybe prone to things like stomach upset or headaches or, you know, worries me that side effects become a poo-poo.
Yeah.
And yet side effects are the things that make me wonder whether I want that or I'm happy to wait AstraZeneca.
I think a lot of people might consider waiting a little bit of time if at
all. Will we do a music or will I do the intro?
Let's do a song. Let's do it.
Okey-dokey.
This is Queen, who is classic band Freddie Mercury we all love. And it's one of their little up-tempo songs, Crazy Little Thing Called Love.
Absolutely. This
is Queen.
This was my grooving.
Yeah, it's a good song.
Love. It's 10:40 and you're on Radio 2XX Public Radio in the ACT, News from the Drug War Front with Jeff and Marion. Karma presents the News from the Drug War Front, and that's the Canberra Alliance for Harm Minimisation and Advocacy. It's Canberra's only peer-based drug user group. Karma provides a wide range of services, including client advocacy, peer treatment support, education, representation, information, creative arts, mentoring and referrals. The Karma office is located in the Church's Centre at Shop 17, Level 154 Benjamin Way in Belconnen. Karma's office hours are generally Monday to Friday, except today, of course. The phone number is 6253 3643. I'll give you that again, 6253 3643. Karma continues to run its Australia First Opioid Overdose Recognition and Response with Naloxone workshops and also does brief interventions with Naloxone with individual clients. Karma can help people with issues related to opioid maintenance treatment, that's methadone or buprenorphine or Buvidal. The availability of detox and rehab services in the ACT, the negative impact of stigma and discrimination, increasing difficulties with getting access to proper pain relief, and in fact all issues faced by people adversely impacted by prohibition and the war on people who use drugs. And I just will throw in there, I had cause to go to the walk-in centre in Dixon yesterday. And in saying that I was an injecting drug user and I actually had an issue relating to my injecting drug use, which is why I had to fess up and say normally I would not confess to being an injecting drug user. But the nurse that I was with, and her name is Kate, hello Kate if you're listening, she was fabulous. She copped my ID use status and said, okay, what do you use? I said, heroin. And she said, okay. So you've got some kind of pain relief at home, but I would suggest you use Panadol or paracetamol or Nurofen. But she was terrific. She just took it as fact, didn't judge me, and went on to treat the issue I'd presented with. So, and that has been such an unusual event for me that I think it's worth giving her a shout out about and saying, go for it.
Isn't that in all health services? We just ask for the same.
It should be like that. We want it to be like that, but we don't expect to be treated like that, Jeffrey, do we? So non-discriminatory accepts my glad I turned up and accepts my behaviour as fact and just part and parcel of my lifestyle that she needs to take into consideration when asking me if I can stick to a particular treatment regime. So, I was really impressed.
More
so
power
thank
to
you,
people
Kate.
Like her.
Yeah,
definitely.
So you need help there. And there's another guy, David at Western, who's a nurse practitioner, also gave support over the telephone. They probably should have referred me on, but they were really good and dealt with me there and then because they said, would you go to a doctor today? And I said, nah.
Well, you'd be no struggling chance. To get one. Yeah.
Well, I wasn't going to get one today. Yeah. I've got an appointment with my doctor tomorrow, but only a telephone appointment.
Yeah.
And I went to the walk-in clinic because I needed treatment there and then.
No, that's
and
really
I
positive.
Wasn't going to go to emergency. So thanks anyway for that.
No, it's positive to hear that people can be just treated on their merits.
Absolutely.
Okay, the contents of this News from the Drug War Front broadcast does not necessarily reflect the views and or policies of the Canberra Alliance for Harm Minimisation Advocacy. KHARMA does not condone, nor does it condemn drug use and does not promote illegal activity. KHARMA recognises that drug use happens, and as such, KHARMA focuses on harm reduction messages, drug treatment support services, advocacy and community development. KHARMA seeks to reduce the harms associated with drug use as well as the harms associated with the criminalisation of drug use through the provision of empowering programs that concentrate on community development, person-centred holistic healthcare, as case in point, and equity of health service delivery for all people. Do you want to mention the next two naloxone workshops, Marion?
Oh, yes. Look, the next two naloxone are Tuesday, the February the 16th and Tuesday, February the 23rd. Both commence at 2 p.m. The venue is probably the early morning centre, but we'll confirm this at another date. So Tuesday, February the 16th is a good 2 weeks away. Ring 625-33643, get in touch with Damo or Dave and make inquiries and get yourself on the list. So that's two for February. The early morning centre, as people probably know, is on Northbourne Avenue and it's really easily accessed from the interchange in city. But get in contact with Damo or Dave, get your name on the list, you get paid for going to the workshops, you get knowledge on how to bring somebody back from an overdose or how to save a life from an accidental or an intentional overdose. And, you know, with black market drugs these days, you don't know what you're taking, particularly with opiates. It only cures opioid overdose, but that's good enough as it is, okay?
Well,
learn how to do it. It's one way of stopping illicit drug users from dying, and that's what we want. We want to stop them from dying until we get a legal program.
Yeah, but it has been a very highly successful program.
And absolutely. People are picking up and running with it, and they're using it, which is really important.
Absolutely.
And good feedback.
Yeah. No, it's definitely something KHARMA's rightfully proud of. Okay, we're into our first national story. This is from actually the NewYorkPost.com by Jackie Sarlo, January the 24th. Tsai Chi Lop, also known as Asia's El Chapo Guzman, busted in Amsterdam. An alleged drug lord known as Asia's El Chapo has been busted in Amsterdam on suspicion of running a multi-billion dollar narcotics operation, authorities said. Tsai Chi Lop, a Chinese-born Canadian national, was detained without incident at Schiphol Airport at the request of Australian police, which has led an international investigation into his cartel, Dutch police spokesman Thomas Aling said on Saturday. Quote, he was already on the most wanted list and he was detained based on intelligence that we received, Aling said. Authorities said that C, 57, is the leader of the Sam Gore Syndicate, which allegedly dominates the $70 billion a year Asia-Pacific drug trade. C, an ex-convict who formerly lived in Toronto, allegedly ran the massive empire while living in Macau, Hong Kong and Taiwan.
Strange that. All Chinese territories, huh? The interesting thing about this, authorities allege that the cartel has smuggled highly potent meth into more than a dozen countries, in addition to trafficking heroin and MDMA. This is the thing that was brought to light yesterday, Jeffrey, with the whose man whose assets look like in the majority Australian dollars. Yeah, was that, one?
Yeah, there's been quite a bit in the media about the length of the study, the investigation.
Yeah, it's so widespread. I'm pretty sure Interpol plus individual country agencies were linked into that.
Yep.
Okay, the syndicate has been, quote, been connected with or directly involved in at least 13 cases of drug trafficking since 2015, court documents said. Jeremy Douglas, regional representative of the UN Office of Drugs and Crime, that's UNODC, has previously warned that C is as big of a threat as other notorious drug lords. Chi Lop. Is in league with El Chapo, is a league of El Chapo or maybe Pablo Escobar, he told Reuters. The UNODC estimated that C's group pocketed as much as $17 billion in 2018. C is expected to be extradited after appearing before a judge, Dutch police said.
And if people want to get more details, it actually was part of a journalist, or three journalists, Nick McKenzie, Chris Yulman and Joel Tozer, who did a big report in the Sydney Morning Herald on January the 23rd,
okay,
which I'll post on our Facebook page. Yep. And I've actually got a copy for you, Maren, to read
great.
At
Thanks,
your leisure.
Yeah.
But it's a fascinating story of, like you said, global cooperation.
But also multinational. I mean, you cannot do this, you can't bus people globally without multinational, because it's a multinational trade.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah? It's the biggest multinational that there is, I suspect. Bugger Google and Facebook, this is a multinational taxation point that ought to be made. Yeah, if we could tax this trade, we'd be laughing.
Well, this is one of the problems.
And they wouldn't be.
This is one of the hopeful issues that could lead to some change in prohibition.
Is the potential for taxation of this very business.
Lucrative business. And also the savings as well, which should be factored in terms of not having to spend money chasing these people and
absolutely. And
jailing people.
The next one, which is about the banks.
Well,
yeah.
This is quite disturbing. This is from communitywatch.com.au, January the 19th. Australian banks laundered $500 million for cocaine cartels. Okay, the Australian Border Force, or ABF, says at least 16 domestic and international financial institutions became unwitting conduits for drug cartels. It deployed the Border-Related Financial Crimes Unit, whose role is to disrupt illicit financial flows, with assistance from the Financial Intelligence Regulator, known as AUSTRAC. The Australian Border Force declined to reveal the names of the banks or drug cartels for reasons of operational security. Quote, through the course of the investigation, Australian Border Force identified nine Australian financial institutions and seven international financial institutions that were unknowingly facilitating various banking and loan accounts for the suspect entities involved in the case. End quote. The Australian Border Force said traffickers used a number of techniques, including placement or introducing the funds to the banking system, layering or a series of cross-border transactions used to buy goods and disguise the origin of the funds, and integration where the goods are sold and the profits are legitimised. In this instance, the source of the funds were some of the most violent criminal enterprises on the planet. Quote, the trade in cocaine from South America was identified by the referring agency as the source of illicit funds cleaned by the money laundering process, the ABF spokeswoman said. The drugs were sold in North America and were transmitted to bank accounts in Southeast Asia before they were layered through a multitude of Australian bank accounts and in some cases were used to buy expensive electronic devices that could be shipped easily overseas and sold. In the case study, the predominant commodities used to transfer value were electronic devices that included smartphones, smartwatches, digital cameras, laptops, gaming consoles, and other personal electronic devices, the Australian Border Force spokesperson
said. Anything that could be bought for cash under $10,000, yeah?
Possibly,
per
yeah.
item. Okay, it goes on. Invoices of the shipments sent overseas were deliberately undervalued. Once the goods arrived at their destinations, they were sold for their proper face value, allowing offshore collaborators to collect the profits. Detecting such examples of trade misinvoicing is a considerable challenge for customs agencies. According to AUSTRAC, money laundering has come a long way since the 1920s, when Chicago mobster Al Capone tried to legitimise criminal profit by mixing them with revenues from the chain of laundromats. criminal syndicates are increasingly using trade-based money laundering, which sees illegal profits to buy goods which are shipped overseas. Quote, trade-based money laundering is a complex in nature, and in this matter, the investigation involves sharing financial and criminal intelligence between domestic and international government agencies to dismantle this criminal network, AUSTRAC said in a statement. An interim international group of 166 financial intelligence units known as the Egmont Group said in a report from December 2020 that the materials, machinery, scrap metal, fuel, energy and beverage industries were among those likely exploited. The profits of international organised crimes had been estimated at 1.5% of GDP in the IMF. And the International Monetary Fund has estimated around US $4 trillion is laundered every year.
That's serious money. We're not talking
well,
nickels
and dimes.
Well,
the IMF, International Monetary Fund, only funds those countries that cannot afford to pay back their loans. So it just shows you that they are going to be the targets for those places for that money to come out of those, that illicit money to be coming from, because illicit commodities are going to be coming from there too.
Well, you can't blame low-income countries
absolutely
that don't have
not. They,
export
they,
industries. You know,
they have their talents, they have their resources, and they will maximise them. If they're not legal, that's not their fault.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's the way they see it. Yeah. I see it that way.
Yeah.
Okay. AUSTRAC says criminals manipulate invoices in order to transfer the proceeds of crime, pay for illegal goods. This may extend to issuing multiple invoices for the same shipment or sending no goods at all in what are known as ghost shipments. That sounds sensible. The once low-profile financial intelligence regulator hit the headlines in 2017 when the allegations Commonwealth Bank broke the law tens of thousands of times and captured the public's interest again, with claims Westpac notched up almost 20 million breaches 2 years later. More recently, AUSTRAC hit a patch of turbulence after it was forced to recant claims the Catholic Church transferred almost $2 billion to Australia. AUSTRAC confessed the figure was actually $9.5 million and had been inflated many times over by computer coding error.
Oh, dear. That's not something.
Oh, oops.
Yeah.
Confess for that one.
But there have been a number of stories in recent years of Australian banks being either lax...
Well, involved in
or
the...
overlooking suspicious...
paedophile trade, yeah?
Yeah.
Money being sent to the Philippines in order to... like money from paedophile persons, people involved in paedophilia.
I mean...
Well, yeah.
You have to have controls as best you can. Okay, it's... in a globalised world with digital transactions, you know, in split seconds being made, but you still have to follow the law. And it's not up... it's not really good enough for some of these banks to just say, oh, whoops, we took our eye off the ball.
No. Just by the way, Jeffrey, did you see that yesterday? You may not have seen it. Apparently the guy who has squillions of dollars in Bitcoin in the United States has forgotten his password. He has 10 tries. Like, all his assets are in Bitcoin. He's in the United States. He has had 8 tries. He's got 10 tries to go.
And
two more tries to go. He's had 8 tries so far, forgotten his password. He's going to lose his Bitcoin if he can't remember his password.
And it's not.
You'd think he would have written it down somewhere,
Or put it in a safe. Or
made it his address or something.
Wow.
You know, something easy to remember. But two more goes. Mary was telling me this yesterday. I just had to laugh.
I bet he's feeling very nervous. And
I would think he's being very anxious indeed. All his assets are in Bitcoin.
Wow.
And Bitcoin's worth a fair bit now. I mean,
yeah,
it's got taken off again.
It has taken off again. I think, I've heard people explain the concept of cryptocurrencies and why they're likely to be a big part of the future of the financial system. But I must say I don't fully understand how it works. But, yeah, I'd be very upset if I forgot how to access.
Couldn't get access to it because you'd forgotten your PIN number. That's shocking.
That
bad
is
enough
shocking.
Having your card swallowed up by the machine after 3 missed goes.
I've had
at least
happen.
You can get it on Monday.
That's true. Yeah, that's good. Will we go to a song?
Yeah, let's do that. Time for one.
This is one of our favourites from Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Red Right Hand, one of Nick's best, I think. All right. Good morning, listeners, and welcome to this week's News from the Drug War Front. My name is Jeff, and my co-presenter is Marion. Good morning to you, Marion. How are you on this
I'm feeling summer's great, day? Hot and sweaty, Jeffrey, but, you know, lovely to see you. Lovely to have you, listeners. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Mary. Wakey, wakey, rise and shine. I know I woke you up at 7:30, but you can get up again and listen to the radio show now.
Well, sometimes it's nice to get things done early on a hot day, isn't it?
You know, well, it's the only time. Although I suspect we may not get 35 today, Jeffrey.
It's cloudy.
It looks a bit cooler out there and it's raining in Wagga already.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we may get the rain earlier
a little
than
bit
we
earlier.
Thought. Well, hopefully anyway, because I tell you, I had a shower and I was dripping with sweat 5 seconds later.
Yeah, look, I'll be happy with any
cool. Well, you're not a hot person.
I'm not a hot
You're not
person.
A heat person by any stretch of the imagination.
Definitely not. Yeah. All right. Look, I'll just give you some introduction, listeners. This is News from the Drug War Front, brought to you by CARMA, the Canberra Alliance for Harm Minimisation and Advocacy, which is a peer-based, community-controlled drug user organisation. Now, the community of people who inject drugs were very instrumental in the highly successful public health response to the HIV/AIDS epidemic in Australia back in the 1980s, and they remain active in disseminating information into the community about other bloodborne viruses and the harms caused by prohibition. Unfortunately, many human rights abuses of people who use drugs continue, and we would like to take this opportunity to acknowledge the peers who went before us and reaffirm our commitment to fighting the effects of stigma and criminalisation in all of their manifestations. The show aims to inform and educate listeners about the failure of the war on people who use drugs and, of course, promote the services offered by CARMA and also the other agencies in the alcohol and other drug sector in the ACT. And just to give some idea of the show's stories we're going to be talking about, there was a report from the Australian Financial Review that Australian banks laundered $500 million Australian dollars for cocaine cartel organisations.
Yeah, wow.
Which is not really their legal business operations, I would have thought.
No, strange that, yeah.
Another piece, evidently tobacco or illicit tobacco is becoming a highly lucrative trade.
What a surprise, Jeffrey. Now, didn't we say that? Wasn't that going to go up in terms of financing and availability and make a great criminal enterprise the minute that they started to increase the price on the street? They were going to reduce the prices on the black market, recruit to the black market, make a really prevalent black market so that they would undercut the taxation anyway.
That's right.
So get rid of the tax and you make the price of tobacco bugger all, really. So they would provide it with tax-free, which means black market. And then people would be sucked into the black market because it's a big addiction, nicotine.
Oh,
it's a really strong addiction, and getting rid of it's one of my hardest one, I reckon.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I'm an ex-smoker too. I know fully well how
giving it up was would have been a shot.
In a probably a lengthy piece, but I think a very important one given the change of administration in the US to the Biden administration. We've got a piece which we'll discuss called The Biden Administration and Drug Policy, Expectation versus Reality.
Oh, absolutely.
Which
very
puts
useful.
A cautionary note to the optimism that a lot of people might have.
And there's a limit to the amount that he can do in the first 100 days, even though that's how they're measured. And the road to hell is paved with good intentions, Jeffrey. We all know that. But he will do what he can. I have faith in him. He'll do what he can. If it's not achievable, he won't attain it. Yeah?
Look,
he will push for what he can get to. But apart from that, he can't overreach.
No.
Yeah?
He's got a lot on his plate. But my sense of it is he's an experienced politician. He knows how
the
system works.
He's been there forever, yep.
And he's a fundamentally, you know,
decent person.
And that's a hell of an improvement.
And a pragmatic person, I think, too.
Pragmatic.
You know, he knows that he's got to bring another 90 million people along with him who are Trump supporters alone, but also the very left wing of his own party and the Republicans.
Yeah.
So they're already saying 1.9 million, you're kidding. Even though 1.9 million was actually smaller than Trump was asking for. He was asking for 9.1 or something, trillion.
I think he's
deficit,
going to try very hard to find people, Republican senators, who he can have a conversation with.
I think there's about 19 that they're thinking of crossing the floor just for the impeachment.
Wow.
So I suspect there might be more support in the Republican movement than he is anticipating. for the support for the relief package, for the COVID relief package?
That's crucial.
Yeah, absolutely.
People, I mean, unlike here where we had jobs, you know.
Job seeker, job keeper,
which actually made a huge difference to keep people in jobs.
And they're absolutely freaking out at the loss of job keeper.
I'm not surprised. Yeah. But in the US, I think there was one payment under Trump that I think was $1,000 that the cheque had his name on, or, you know, the letter that came with the money.
And made himself a big fella out of doing
as
that.
As if it came out of his pocket. But, you know, this is, I think, another $1,400 to Americans who are battling to feed themselves, Marion.
Absolutely.
In the wealthiest country
absolutely.
On earth.
Absolutely. And even the food agencies, the food support agencies, food stamps agencies haven't got the food to give to them. Let alone the vaccine, what's happening with the vaccine. I kind of wish that the AstraZeneca vaccine was out rather than the COVID one. That's just, the Pfizer one, because the Pfizer one's like minus 70 degrees to maintain its efficacy. What's the AstraZeneca is something like 2.8 degrees positive, so 2.8 degrees storage.
Store it in the fridge.
And that's, piss easy.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned the Pfizer because I bought the Sydney Morning Herald this morning, and on the front page there's a small warning from the Therapeutic Goods Administration that said that the Pfizer vaccine would stop the virus in 95% of recipients, but more than half would experience side effects such as headaches and fatigue.
And that worried me. Minus 70 going into your muscle.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that's not going to hurt, Geoffrey. Minus 70 degrees worth of vaccine into your muscle? Well, that would hurt.
It puts question marks.
Let alone side effects from the drug itself. Yeah?
Yeah.
And what's been happening in Norway, they're saying, oh, that's with frail aged people. Yeah, so frail aged people are dying from it. What are the side effects for the people who aren't frail aged but maybe prone to things like stomach upset or headaches or, you know, worries me that side effects become a poo-poo.
Yeah.
And yet side effects are the things that make me wonder whether I want that or I'm happy to wait for the AstraZeneca.
I think a lot of people might consider waiting a little bit of time if at
all. Will we do a music or will I do the intro?
Let's do a song. Let's do it.
Okey-dokey.
This is Queen, who is classic band Freddie Mercury we all love. Yeah. And it's one of their little up-tempo songs, Crazy Little Thing Called Love.
Absolutely.
Is Queen.
This was my grooving.
Yeah, it's a good song.
Love. It's 10:40 and you're on Radio 2XX, public radio in the ACT, News from the Drug War Front with Geoff and Marion. Karma presents the News from the Drug War Front, and that's the Canberra Alliance for Harm Minimisation and Advocacy. It's Canberra's only peer-based drug user group. Karma provides a wide range of services, including client advocacy, peer treatment support, education, representation, information, creative arts, mentoring and referrals. The Karma office is located in the Church's Centre at Shop 17, Level 154 Benjamin Way in Belconnen. Karma's office hours are generally Monday to Friday, except today, of course. The phone number is 6253 3643. I'll give you that again, 6253 3643. Karma continues to run its Australia First Opioid Overdose Recognition and Response with Naloxone workshops and also does brief interventions with Naloxone with individual clients. Karma can help people with issues related to opioid maintenance treatment, that's methadone or buprenorphine or Buvidal, the availability of detox and rehab services in the ACT, the negative impact of stigma and discrimination, increasing difficulties with getting access to proper pain relief, and in fact all issues faced by people adversely impacted by prohibition and the war on people who use drugs. And I just will throw in there, I had cause to go to the walk-in centre in Dixon yesterday. And in saying that I was an injecting drug user and I actually had an issue relating to my injecting drug use, which is why I had to fess up and say, normally I would not confess to being an injecting drug user. But the nurse that I was with, and her name is Kate, hello Kate, if you're listening, she was fabulous. She copped my ID use status and said, okay, what do you use? I said, heroin. And she said, okay. So you've got some kind of pain relief at home, but I would suggest you use Panadol or paracetamol or Nurofen. But she was terrific. She just took it as fact, didn't judge me, and went on to treat the issue I'd presented with. So, and that has been such an unusual event for me that I think it's worth giving her a shout out about and saying go for it.
Isn't that in all health services? We just ask for the same.
It should be like that. We want it to be like that. That we don't expect to be treated like that, Jeffrey, do we? So non-discriminatory accepts my glad I turned up.
Yep.
And accepts my behaviour as fact, and just part and parcel of my lifestyle that she needs to take into consideration when asking me if I can stick to a particular treatment regime. So, yeah, I was really impressed.
More
so
power
thank
to
you,
people
Kate.
Like her.
Yeah,
definitely.
So you need help there. And there's another guy, David at Western, who's a nurse practitioner, also gave support over the telephone. They probably should have referred me on, but they were really good and dealt with me there and then, because they said, would you go to a doctor today? And I said, nah.
Well, you'd be struggling to get one. Yeah.
Well, I wasn't going to get one today. Yeah. I've got an appointment with my doctor tomorrow, but only a telephone appointment.
Yeah.
And I went to the walk-in clinic because I needed treatment there and then.
No, that's
and
really
I
positive.
Wasn't going to go to emergency. So yeah. Thanks anyway for that.
No, it's positive to hear that people can be just treated on their merits.
Absolutely.
Okay, the contents of this News from the Drug War Front broadcast does not necessarily reflect the views and or policies of the Canberra Alliance for Harm Minimisation Advocacy. KHARMA does not condone, nor does it condemn drug use and does not promote illegal activity. KHARMA recognises that drug use happens, and as such, KHARMA focuses on harm reduction messages, drug treatment support services, advocacy and community development. KHARMA seeks to reduce the harms associated with drug use, as well as the harms associated with the criminalisation of drug use, through the provision of empowering programs that concentrate on community development, person-centred holistic healthcare, as case in point, and equity of health service delivery for all people. Do you want to mention the next two naloxone workshops, Marion?
Oh, yes. Look, the next two naloxone are Tuesday, the February the 16th and Tuesday, February the 23rd. Both commence at 2 p.m. The venue is probably the early morning centre, but we'll confirm this at another date. So Tuesday, February the 16th is a good 2 weeks away. Ring 625-33643, get in touch with Damo or Dave and make inquiries and get yourself on the list. So that's two for February. The early morning centre, as people probably know, is on Northbourne Avenue and it's really easily accessed from the interchange in city. But get in contact with Damo or Dave, get your name on the list, you get paid for going to the workshops, you get knowledge on how to bring somebody back from an overdose or how to save a life from an accidental or an intentional overdose. And, you know, with our black market drugs these days, you don't know what you're taking, particularly with opiates. It only cures opioid overdose, but that's good enough as it is, okay?
Well,
learn how to do it. It's one way of stopping illicit drug users from dying, and that's what we want. We want to stop them from dying until we get a legal program.
Yeah, but it has been a very highly successful program.
And absolutely. People are picking up and running with it, and they're using it, which is really important.
Absolutely.
And good feedback.
Yeah. No, it's definitely something KHARMA's rightfully proud of. Okay, we're into our first national story. This is from actually the NewYorkPost.com by Jackie Salo, January the 24th. Tsai Chi Lop, also known as Asia's El Chapo Guzman, busted in Amsterdam. An alleged drug lord known as Asia's El Chapo has been busted in Amsterdam on suspicion of running a multi-billion dollar narcotics operation, authorities said. Tsai Chi Lop, a Chinese-born Canadian national, was detained without incident at Schiphol Airport at the request of Australian police, which has led an international investigation into his cartel, Dutch police spokesman Thomas Alling said on Saturday. Quote, he was already on the most wanted list and he was detained based on intelligence that we received, Alling said. Authorities said that C, 57, is the leader of the Sam Gore Syndicate, which allegedly dominates the $70 billion a year Asia-Pacific drug trade. C, an ex-convict who formerly lived in Toronto, allegedly ran the massive empire while living in Macau, Hong Kong and Taiwan.
Strange that. All Chinese territories, huh? And the interesting thing about this, authorities allege that the cartel has smuggled highly potent meth into more than a dozen countries, in addition to trafficking heroin and MDMA. This is the thing that was brought to light yesterday, Jeffrey, with the whose man whose assets look like in the majority Australian dollars. Yeah, was that, I think that one?
Yeah, there's been quite a bit in the media about the length of the study, the investigation.
Yeah, it's so widespread. I'm pretty sure Interpol plus individual country agencies were linked into that.
Yep.
Okay, the syndicate has been, quote, been connected with or directly involved in at least 13 cases of drug trafficking since 2015, court documents said. Jeremy Douglas, regional representative of the UN Office of Drugs and Crime, that's UNODC, has previously warned that C is as big of a threat as other notorious drug lords. Chi Lop. Is in league with El Chapo, is a league of El Chapo or maybe Pablo Escobar, he told Reuters. The UNODC estimated that C's group pocketed as much as $17 billion in 2018. C is expected to be extradited after appearing before a judge, Dutch police said.
And if people want to get more details, it actually was part of a journalist, or three journalists, Nick McKenzie, Chris Yulman and Joel Tozer, who did a big report in the Sydney Morning Herald on January the 23rd,
okay,
which I'll post on our Facebook page. Yep. And I've actually got a copy for you, Maren, to read
great. Thanks,
at your
darling.
Leisure.
Yeah.
But it's a fascinating story of, like you said, global cooperation.
But also multinational. I mean, you cannot do this, you can't bus people globally without multinational, because it's a multinational trade.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah? It's the biggest multinational that there is, I suspect. Bugger Google and Facebook, this is a multinational taxation point that ought to be made. Yeah, if we could tax this trade, we'd be laughing.
Well, this is one of the problems.
And they wouldn't be.
This is one of the hopeful issues that could lead to some change in prohibition.
Legalisation is the potential for taxation of this very business.
Lucrative business. And also the savings as well, which should be factored in terms of not having to spend money chasing these people and
absolutely.
And jailing people.
The next one, which is about the banks.
Well, this is quite disturbing. This is from communitywatch.com.au, January the 19th. Australian banks laundered $500 million for cocaine cartels. Okay, the Australian Border Force, or ABF, says at least 16 domestic and international financial institutions became unwitting conduits for drug cartels. It deployed the Border-Related Financial Crimes Unit, whose role is to disrupt illicit financial flows, with assistance from the Financial Intelligence Regulator, known as AUSTRAC. The Australian Border Force declined to reveal the names of the banks or drug cartels for reasons of operational security. Quote, through the course of the investigation, Australian Border Force identified nine Australian financial institutions and seven international financial institutions that were unknowingly facilitating various banking and loan accounts for the suspect entities involved in the case. End quote. Mm. The Australian Border Force said traffickers used a number of techniques, including placement or introducing the funds to the banking system, layering, or a series of cross-border transactions used to buy goods and disguise the origin of the funds, and integration, where the goods are sold and the profits are legitimised. In this instance, the source of the funds were some of the most violent criminal enterprises on the planet. Quote, the trade in cocaine from South America was identified by the referring agency as the source of illicit funds cleaned by the money laundering process, the ABF spokeswoman said. The drugs were sold in North America and were transmitted to bank accounts in Southeast Asia before they were layered through a multitude of Australian bank accounts and in some cases were used to buy expensive electronic devices that could be shipped easily overseas and sold. In the case study, the predominant commodities used to transfer value were electronic devices that included smartphones, smartwatches, digital cameras, laptops, gaming consoles, and other personal electronic devices, the Australian Border Force spokesperson
said. Anything that could be bought for cash under $10,000, yeah?
Possibly,
Per item. Okay, goes on. Invoices of the shipments sent overseas were deliberately undervalued. Once the goods arrived at their destinations, they were sold for their proper face value, allowing offshore collaborators to collect the profits. Detecting such examples of trade misinvoicing is a considerable challenge for customs agencies. According to AUSTRAC, money laundering has come a long way since the 1920s, when Chicago mobster Al Capone tried to legitimise criminal profit by mixing them with revenues from the chain of laundromats. criminal syndicates are increasingly using trade-based money laundering, which sees illegal profits to buy goods which are shipped overseas. Quote, trade-based money laundering is complex in nature, and in this matter, the investigation involves sharing financial and criminal intelligence between domestic and international government agencies to dismantle this criminal network, AUSTRAC said in a statement. An interim international group of 166 financial intelligence units known as the Egmont Group said in a report from December 2020 that the materials, machinery, scrap metal, fuel, energy and beverage industries were among those likely exploited. The profits of international organised crimes had been estimated at 1.5% of GDP in the IMF, and the International Monetary Fund has estimated around US $4 trillion is laundered every year.
That's big serious amount. Money. We're not big. Talking
well, the IMF,
dimes.
International Monetary Fund, only funds those countries that cannot afford to pay back their loans. So it just shows you that they are going to be the targets for those places for that money to come out of those, that illicit money to be coming from, because illicit commodities are going to be coming from there too.
Well, you can't blame low-income countries
absolutely
that don't have
not.
They, export they, industries. You know,
they have their talents, they have their resources, and they will maximise them. If they're not legal, that's not their fault.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's the way they see it. Yeah. I see it that way.
Yeah.
Okay. AUSTRAC says criminals manipulate invoices in order to transfer the proceeds of crime, pay for illegal goods. This may extend to issuing multiple invoices for the same shipment or sending no goods at all in what are known as ghost shipments. That sounds sensible. The once low-profile financial intelligence regulator hit the headlines in 2017 when the allegations Commonwealth Bank broke the law tens of thousands of times and captured the public's interest again with claims Westpac notched up almost 20 million breaches 2 years later. More recently, AUSTRAC hit a patch of turbulence after it was forced to recant claims the Catholic Church transferred almost $2 billion to Australia. AUSTRAC confessed the figure was actually 9.5 million and had been inflated many times over by computer coding error.
Oh dear, that's not something.
Oh, oops.
Yeah.
Confess for that one.
But there have been a number of stories in recent years of Australian banks being either lax...
Well, involved in
or
the...
overlooking suspicious...
paedophile trade, yeah?
Yeah.
Money being sent to the Philippines in order to... like money from paedophile persons, people involved in paedophilia.
I mean...
Well, yeah.
You have to have controls as best you can. Okay, it's... in a globalised world with digital transactions, you know, in a split seconds being made, but you still have to follow the law. And it's not up... it's not really good enough for some of these banks to just say, oh, whoops, we took our eye off the ball.
No. Just by the way, Jeffrey, did you see yesterday? You may not have seen it. Apparently the guy who has squillions of dollars in Bitcoin in the United States has forgotten his password. He has 10 tries. Like, all his assets are in Bitcoin. He's in the United States. He has had 8 tries. He's got 10 tries to go.
And
two more tries to go. He's had 8 tries so far, forgotten his password. He's going to lose his Bitcoin if he can't remember his password.
And it's not.
You'd think he would have written it down somewhere,
Or put it in a safe.
Or made it his address or something.
Wow.
You know, something easy to remember. But two more goes. Mary was telling me this yesterday. I just had to laugh.
I bet he's feeling very nervous. And
I would think he's been very anxious indeed. All his assets are in Bitcoin.
Wow.
And Bitcoin's worth a fair bit now.
Yeah,
it's got taken off again.
It has taken off again. I think, I've heard people explain the concept of cryptocurrencies and why they're likely to be a big part of the future of the financial system, but I must say I don't fully understand how it works. But yeah, I'd be very upset if I forgot how to access.
Couldn't get access to it because you'd forgotten your bloody your PIN number. That's shocking.
That
bad
is
enough
shocking.
Having your card swallowed up by the machine after 3 missed goes.
I've had
at
that
least
happen.
You can get it on Monday.
That's true. Yeah, that's good. Will we go to a song?
Yeah, let's do that. Time for one.
This is one of our favourites from Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Red Right Hand, one of Nick's best, I think.